Hey there, teachers. This episode is one of those note-taking worthy episodes. But before we dive in, let me ask you this. Do you often feel torn when it comes to differentiating your lessons? On one hand, you know that developing different versions or approaches to one lesson is important when trying to reach every student at every level, and yet it can feel so time-consuming and difficult that you can't help but despise the entire process. That was definitely me when I was in the classroom. But differentiation can be something that is so easy and quick for your ELA lessons that you might even begin to naturally incorporate it without a second thought. And that's exactly our goal for today's episode. We are going to be giving you a list of our favorite differentiation ideas that you can utilize in a whole group setting over and over and over again. So grab a pen and paper, take some notes, and let's dive in. Hi there, Caitlin here. Our mission at EB Academics is simple. Help middle school ELA teachers take back their time outside of the classroom by providing them with engaging lessons, planning frameworks, and genuine support so that you can become the best version of yourself, both inside and outside of the classroom. So if you think you might be ready to try something new because you know you simply cannot continue the way that you have been, that I'd invite you to take a moment to check out the EB Teachers Club, the EB Writing Program, or the EB Grammar Program by visiting the links in the description of the podcast. We hope to continue to support you within one of our programs in the future. And in the meantime, we look forward to serving you right here on the podcast each week. All right, everybody, welcome to today's episode. We are kicking off March with differentiation. We have two episodes actually about differentiation that are going to be airing in March this week and then the third week of March. So be on the lookout for that. But today we are talking about differentiation with whole group instruction. So I don't know about you, but when I think of differentiation, I'm immediately taken back to dividing my class into small groups, trying to come up with like different assignments for each group, racing around the room to help each group because now there's like four different lessons going on. And I also remember some back to school professional development about differentiation. I'm taking notes and then I walk away from those things and I'm like, wait, I don't even know how to implement this in my classroom. What does this even mean? What did I even learn? And so maybe you're like me where in the past you've gone down the Pinterest rabbit hole searching for differentiation ideas for like a novel unit that you're planning. And just like I was saying that now maybe you're even more unsure of what to do to differentiate them before, because quite frankly, like it can be very confusing. And so today we decided, you know, we got such great feedback on having Pat, our curriculum writer, come on an episode in February that she is back to join us today on today's episode. And she's going to be sharing a bunch of strategies with you that you can use when you want to differentiate for whole group instruction so that you aren't racing around the room trying to juggle a bunch of different small groups at any given time. So while we go into this episode, I just want to preface it with this. A lot of information is going to be shared, but I want you to pick just one or two ideas that jump out at you and give those a try, right? It's all about the actual implementation. So consider listening to the whole episode. Maybe you pick just one or just two things that really resonate with you. Go back and listen to those two sections again, and then make sure that you are well prepared to actually go use those strategies in the classroom. So Pat, thanks so much for joining us. We're super excited to have you here. And we're going to do like a kind of Q&A style with you for this episode. So Jessica, I'm going to hand it over to you to kick it off. And Pat, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
And I feel like Pat, you're the perfect person to talk about this because as the curriculum writer, differentiation is always on your mind when you're creating lesson plans. So yes, I know, you have a bunch of great ideas to share with us.
Yeah.
So first question, because I feel like we've heard as teachers that one idea that you could possibly try for differentiation is to actually like pull a few students aside and pre-teach them some specific content before you actually dive into like a whole group lesson. The thought being that then the main lesson will be more effective for those students. So if teachers want to try this, can you share an example of what might at least look like in the classroom if you pull a few students aside? And then what benefits do you see from trying out this strategy?
Yeah. So first, in general, I just want to say that I'm really excited to talk about all of this today, because differentiating at the individual and the small group level is really important. But I don't think we often think about differentiating at the whole class level. And I think some of us even think that we can't be differentiating at the whole class level, and some of us are actually already doing that. So hopefully, we can talk about some extra ideas today. This first idea is really powerful if you want to give it a try. It takes a little bit of forethought, but essentially, what you're going to be doing is taking some students whom you foresee having a little bit of trouble with the content, and you're going to be turning them into mini experts. So this is a huge confidence builder for kids. It's a very powerful method. It's going to take a little bit of planning, but I guarantee you it's going to be a memorable thing to start incorporating in your room. So here's just like a quick example. So say you're going to do a lesson on themes from a novel that your class is reading. So the day before the lesson, you can pull a small group aside. If you don't have a co-teacher, you could do this while the other students are maybe they're doing independent reading, maybe they're working on their independent work, maybe it's the last 10 minutes of class and you're giving them a head start on their homework, whatever it is. This would be the time where they're kind of working and they don't need you, and you're working with this small group of students. If you have a co-teacher or a support staff, they could be helping those students while you're, teaching this small group. So you pull the small group aside, and then you tell your group that they are going to be experts in the next lesson, so they need to know the info early. And then you show them how, if let's say that we're going to be talking about theme. So you show them how you take a topic, you ask what the author wants the readers to believe about the topic, and then answer that question to get the theme. So you're saying there's basically three parts to learning about the theme. Notice that I pick something like really simple. You're not going to do a half hour lesson with these kids. It's very quick. Have the students write down examples to share with the class the next day. And you could even have each kid just be in charge of one idea. Like Sam, you're going to be in charge of the topic. Sonia, you're going to be in charge of the question. And Sergio, you're going to be in charge of the answer. And you give each of them a little example to share with the class. So they only have a little bite-sized thing they have to remember for the next day. So the next day, as you're teaching the lesson, you're going to ask those students to help you. So you can say, for example, okay, Sam, what is the first thing we need when we're trying to find the theme? And then Sam will say the topic. And you'll say, okay, what is an example of a topic, Sam? And Sam will share the topic example that you talked about yesterday. So she already has it and she already knows it and she can already be successful with it. And then you can say, okay, Sonia, what is the next thing we have to do? And she'll say, okay, we have to ask what the author wants us to believe about the topic. And then she'll say her example, and then et cetera. So basically, you're using them to kind of share that information. And what's nice about it is that these students are not lost in the lesson. They're ahead of the lesson. So they don't feel at the end of it like they have to catch up. They kind of feel like they're just kind of practicing what they already know about it. So the benefits of this is that the kids who need the support are interacting more with the information because they're getting reinforcement. They're learning it twice. And also the class itself is getting a more interesting lesson because they're watching their peers come up and give examples and help to share, which is a lot more interesting, frankly, than watching the teacher all the time do all of the teaching. So it really benefits everybody. A quick note is that you don't want to use the same students all the time for obvious reasons. So don't
Yes.
always pick the same three or four students. And it doesn't even have to always be students who you think will need extra support. You can also choose students who are like your high flyers too. When you choose those students, you might want to give them a little bit more responsibility, so add some rigor. With those kids, you might want them to create their own examples, maybe do a bit of research, ask them maybe, could you come up with some good questions to ask the class to make sure they're understanding what we're learning? So give them a little bit more responsibility, but they can certainly be your mini experts too. And you can just do that throughout the year. And I think the most important thing to remember is they're just bite-sized pieces of information. They're just mini experts on these little topics, but it's a really powerful tool to be proactive in helping students rather than reactive to kids who aren't really getting the information.
Totally. First, I mean, I love that tip. I think it's doable, which is always great for teachers. But I'm so
Yeah.
glad you brought up about picking different students. And I know Pat, you and I had talked about this recently. Caitlin, I was telling Pat how, like, when I go into Jameson's fifth grade class and I work with students, it tends to be the same few students every time. And it's like the kids pick up on who
For
I'm
sure.
working with and why, right? And especially as kids get older. So if you're able to pull in the kids who don't typically, get pulled out, then hey, they're like, wait a minute. I kind of want to go
Right.
over there. I want to be the expert. And it makes it more fun, more engaging, all the things. And no one feels stigmatized, like I'm getting extra help.
One of the
Yeah, I
things
saw
I want
that.
to point out about Pat, the way in which you described it too, is just how simple it can be. You know, I just, when I hear like, make the kid the expert, I'm like, oh my God, what am I actually going to
Right.
have to do? You know, this is super approachable and a very easy
Right.
thing that you can bring into your classroom. I love it.
So good. Okay, you're on a roll. We've got another question for you. So now it's whole group lesson. Maybe I have polled kids. They are the experts. I'm going about my lesson. What can I do during the lesson to really integrate visual aids or records to help my students who have different learning styles, particularly visual learners?
Yeah, so firstly, it's really important to note key ideas and pieces of info on the board during whole class lessons. I know at EB we're starting to add instructional support ideas to our lesson plans, and a lot of those ideas are simply write this information on the board. And it sounds silly, but we often forget. I know I did. My co-teacher often reminded me to write pieces of information on the board as I say it, because that just it really reinforces the learning to just get it on the board. And when I say board, it could also be the screen, you know, whatever you have in your classroom, so that students can see it. But I think that we also know as teachers that if you've been teaching for probably more than a semester, you know that we shouldn't turn our backs on our class for more than any long length of time, right? Like in the movies, I feel like they turn their backs on the kids for like a half hour to write down a huge poem on the board. You should never do that, right? So this is doubly helpful. You can actually have a student assistant write those notes for you. You're not turning your back on the class, so that's helpful for you. But it's also helpful for the students getting the visual information. And it's helpful for the student who is the assistant. They are getting up there, they're not distracted by anything else. They're physically moving around. And so it's helpful for them as well. And obviously, you want to, you know, change out who is your assistant. It's not always going to be the same student every time, but grab students to come up to the board and write things down for you as you talk. That can be really helpful. If you have an artistic student, you can have them come up and use your art skills. That can be really helpful. I was not artistic, so I would bring up students with a little bit of an artistic flair. Maybe, for example, you're having a discussion. They could draw a word cloud as you talk, words that are coming up often, they can kind of write down on the board. Maybe you're doing a dialogue, you know, discussion with students. They can write down quotes and put the little speech bubbles around it just to kind of add a little bit more fun to the visual. And again, the student who's doing it is also up there, not distracted, and they're physically moving. You know, studies have shown that doodling can help us to pay attention in class. So that could be very helpful. And you can let students do it in their notebooks too. It doesn't have to just be the student on the board. They can be doing this also when they're taking notes. And this is kind of a fun one. So beyond just like having students write something on the board or hold up a poster or pass out handouts or other physical things, you can even do something silly like maybe assign a student a word. This will only work with students who like to be the center of attention. So this is going to be the student who wants to do something like this. But this would be like an example. So let's say you are doing a lesson on claim. Okay, so you're teaching essays and you're teaching students how to write a claim. You can say, every time I say the word claim, Xavier is going to stand up with his hands on his hips like he's standing firm in his position. And so every time you say the word claim, Xavier is going to get up there and he's going to do it. If you know that Xavier is a ham and he's going to love it, that's going to work out great. The students are going to laugh. They're going to remember the lesson. Xavier's going to be moving. He's going to remember the lesson. It works out really well. Don't embarrass students. It's volunteer only, but that can be a really fun way to do things too.
Oh my God,
I
so
love
good.
it so much.
It's funny because my very first year of teaching, my most like charismatic student was Xavier, and I would have definitely like had him do that. So I think that's great. Love it.
that
And
too.
also your visual, like the explanation of why to include visuals just really caught my attention here, because I'm going to go back to being in fifth grade. But yesterday I was in the classroom and the students were studying memoirs. So they're writing one. And the teacher read a sample. It was a great sample. And then she asked them that as they were listening to it, and the sample was on the board so they could visually see it, she wanted them to create a timeline. And she's like, create parallel timelines, internal and external. But that was her instructions. And I looked around and the kids were like, huh? Like they had no clue what that meant. I was a little like uncertain, even though I think I could figure it out, right? So then I had four students with me and I'm like directing them how to do it. But I got up and walked around. Every kid had a different interpretation of what that meant. And if one of us, you know, at the time I should have just done it, had just gone to the board and drew a sample up there, I feel like the discussion afterward would have been so much more productive because they would have seen, like, oh, I should have had two lines above and below each other. And what I'm writing in the external, now I have to have something that matches it in the internal. Instead, the discussion was kind of all over the place and it wasn't very effective. So something so simple to just remember to draw the example or write the keyword, like you said, makes such a difference.
Yeah.
So.
Or if you saw two students who were both doing it ineffectively in two different ways, you could have them both come up on the board and share both of their ways of doing it. Yeah.
Totally. Oh my God. These are such good ideas. Like, I'm loving them. All right. Next question for you is appropriately about questions. So, what kind of questions can teachers ask during a whole group lesson to naturally build in differentiation?
Yeah, so I think most of us know that questions are great for differentiating because there's a lot of different levels and different types. But we don't really think about that during the whole class discussion where we're more just like, asking kind of comprehension type of questions. So a great way to offer questions at the right level of difficulty is actually to give students a choice of a few questions that they can answer. So for example, you could write two questions on the board. Do you ever feel bad about character X? Why or why not? Or sorry, I should say, do you ever feel bad for character X? Why or why not? And do you ever think the author wants us to feel bad for character X? Why or why not? You can put both of those on the board and you can let students choose which one to answer, or you can let them answer both. So the second question is a little trickier because the students have to shift to the author's purpose, but both of them are going to cover the same general concept. Most of the students can probably tell you whether or not they personally feel bad for a character. The higher level students are going to be able to give you evidence that the author wants them to feel that way. And so everyone can respond, and then your higher level students can respond to the higher level question. And then another method, and I use this all the time, and it's so helpful, is using what I call question extensions. So this is when you offer another text, enough, sorry, another task for students who finish early with the question. So for example, maybe you're going to read a novel where leadership is a big topic. You could say to the whole class, what makes a good leader? Write down one sentence that you believe defines what a good leader is. And everyone's doing that. And then you can say, if you finish that while others are still working, write down two or three people, past or present, who you think are good leaders. So this challenges students who find the first question to be easy, and it helps the other students from feeling the stress of looking around and seeing others having finished up while they're still thinking and writing. And that part's really important. No one's looking around going, oh shoot, everyone's done and I'm still working on this. No one knows who's working on which task. They all know everyone's just writing. And students are challenged if they found the first part to be too easy. And I would also add that a lot of students find it helpful to have examples to choose from when they're answering questions. So going back to the leader example, and this is what I actually use with my 12th graders. So I know it would work in middle school if 12th graders found this to be helpful. We were doing a social activist unit. So going back to the leader example, if you ask what are three traits of a good leader, you might get some blank stares from students who have a lower vocabulary or just haven't thought much about this topic before. So it can be more effective to give students a list of character traits and say, highlight five of these words that you think connect to being a good leader. It makes a huge difference to have the words in front of them and to pick from a list versus coming up with them out of nowhere. Then tell them, feel free to look up words or ask a buddy if you need help with one. Maybe you don't know a word, that's okay. We can use a dictionary. And then when they're done, say, circle the highlighted word that you think is the most important trait of a good leader. So now students at every level have been analyzing, prioritizing, and evaluating, and no one's kind of sitting there looking around. And also, they probably are pushing themselves to use higher level words because you've given them some options that go beyond what they would immediately think about.
So as you're sharing this, Pat, it's actually making me think about an experience that I personally just went through. I did an art project with a group of people at a retreat that I was at recently, and someone led this project. I'm not super artistic, so I'm the student in class who's going to struggle, right, with the directions and how we're doing this. And so very similar to what you were just saying of like providing words to be able or like some examples of things. So at first he was like, draw how you feel. And I'm like, that's no. Like, what do you mean,
Right.
draw
That's abstract.
out a line? And so he gave like some examples on the board. Like he's like, maybe it's a line that looks like this or a circle that looks like this. So I'm just thinking about with the example of leadership of providing some words
Yes.
for our students. And so I was like, okay, yeah, I can do that, right? And then he had us go a little bit deeper. He's like, now just write some words on the paper. So he's giving me access to parts of my creativity that I don't even know I'm capable of and exist simply by the way in which he's leading me down that path. And I think what
Exactly.
you just explained for providing some examples for our students, the different types of questions, and like I'm not feeling bad because someone next to me is an incredible artist and is like doing, she's like, draw how you feel. She's like, I got this, like this, you know, and I'm like, that is not my situation at all. But because he was like, if you feel this, like just keep going. If you're struggling, here's what we can do, and blah, blah, blah. It was a really neat experience for me as a learner that I got to be able to have this kind of final product that I never would have been able to access if I didn't have his differentiated guidance for me as an artist in this experience. So I can only imagine just it's so simple, right? But I don't think that we think about it often enough, intentionally enough to be able to give that to our students. And I just think it's such a great way to build confidence with our kids. I loved all of that so much. Thank you for
Yeah.
sharing that.
The examples are they're so important. And that actually reminds me another great thing that you can do too, because you say access, is also give them the option of writing their own. So in addition, you can say, here's a list of traits, or you can write your own, because you're right. Sometimes they may read these and they're reading adjectives, and as they're reading them, other adjectives may come to mind. And now they're kind of opening up their minds to other ideas too. So sometimes examples can even just kind of open the brain a little bit, help them to access parts that just weren't open yet.
Absolutely.
And I think as teachers, you know, if they choose to try this strategy in the classroom, like to develop that muscle of coming up with really good questions and thinking of ideas like this, like listing the words, rely on ChatGPT, right? Go
Oh,
in
yeah.
there and put in a question and say, write this five different ways for me, or make it at a high level, a low level, add sentence stems, whatever. And you're going to start to be like, oh, never thought of that one. And then it'll come more naturally to you.
Yeah. And in ELA, there's so many things that just lists of words are like, mood words, tone words, character traits. There's so many lists that we have as English teachers to draw from.
Totally. Okay, last question for me before Caitlin has a few, I know. I feel like this is one I always heard in college as like a great strategy, turn and talks, right? Build those into your lesson. It's good for engagement for students. It makes every student participate, like all the benefits of that. But can you walk us through, like, how do you use this in middle school ELA in particular? And then maybe speak into some of those benefits of turn and talks.
Yeah, so this is a timeless protocol. Our teachers probably did that with us, it has great potential, but it can also go off the rails. Some teachers don't even use it because they've just had bad experiences with it. It totally depends on how you implement it. I think a lot of us have experienced students who rush through the talk, or they just don't talk at all. And beyond just being really careful with where you seat students so they have the right chemistry, there's two things that I would suggest. One is obvious, but it bears repeating, and that is be a part of the talks. So circulate and listen, and then during the whole class discussion, come back whole class and share with the class some of the good things that you heard during the discussion. So this is not a time to go like check your email and stuff. Make sure you're walking around and listening. I think most teachers do that, but we all have those days where it's like, okay, they're engaged in something, I'm going to go do something else, but you really have to be a part of that. And this is a really helpful method that I learned to get kids listening actively during these talks. So what I do is when I start the turn and talk, I say, when you're done, I'm going to ask you to share your some of you to share your partner's response with the class. So really listen well. So going back to the last example, maybe they could share the character trait that their partner chose for a good leader. So they're listening to each other talk about what character trait that they chose, and then they're sharing with their class what their partner said. And that makes them accountable for listening. So students are discussing, I'm circulating, I'm listening, and then during the whole class share, I'm calling on students that I know, because I was listening, They have partners who gave good responses, and I'm calling on those students. And I'm also calling on volunteers who really think their partners gave a good response. So my goal is to build understanding and confidence, and I'm not trying to embarrass anyone by like catching them not listening. If I overheard like a not so great conversation, I'm going to go over and maybe handle that personally with that group. I'm not going to call on them as an example during the class. So this it's all about trust. And during the whole class, share, you know, just make sure everyone feels really good about sharing each other's ideas.
I love seeing it from the lens of building confidence and not just responding to a question and having a discussion, right? There are so many like little intricacies to teaching that we can pick up on, like the more we practice and the better we get at our craft. That one's great. Thanks for sharing that, Pat. So we have two more questions, and then we will call it a day for today's podcast. I'm loving this so much. I hope that you guys are too as listeners. And if you are, let us know over on Instagram at EB Academics. Send me a message and I'll make sure that Pat gets it. If you want to send her a little love her way so that she feels good about coming on the podcast again, because I'm sure this is not the last time. So wait time is another strategy that we all learned back in our college programs, master's programs, whatever it is that we were in as teachers. And I want to know, how can teachers make wait time a habit that they naturally do? And then also, like, what is the connection to differentiation? We posted something on our Instagram the other day about like my biggest differentiation strategy, and it was wait, like, just wait. That's it. And
Yeah.
people were a little bit confused. I got some messages about that. So I'd love for you to kind of dive into this a little bit more and talk to us about this.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of like the connection to differentiation, I think we learn differently and we have different personalities, and some people need a moment to think, and some people need a moment to get brave and to volunteer. And some people who have a thought right away, they could have a better thought. They waited a second, really, dug a little bit deeper. So my first piece of advice is honestly explain to students what wait time is and why you use it. Be totally open with it. This is what wait time is, and this is why, we're going to get a little awkward with this, kids. I'm going to wait a second before I'm going to call on you. And you can give guidelines like, I'm going to ask you a question, and I don't want anyone to raise their hand to respond for, and you can give a time like 5 seconds. I think most of the literature says 3 to 5 seconds for wait time. I would say if you literally tell students we're going to do wait time now, you could get away with adding a couple seconds to there because they're not like confused about it. And you can even build in a signal for students to raise their hands, like raise your own hand first, and then they know that the wait time is up and now they can raise their hands. But I literally told my students, I'm going to make this awkward and I'm not going to call on anyone right away. So don't just shoot your hands up. Or if you do, you're just going to be hanging out there for a second. So we're going to wait for a moment.
Yeah, as opposed to asking a question and being like, I'll wait. It's like, okay, well, like,
Exactly.
why?
Right.
Yes.
And then honestly, the most powerful method that I've found is having students write down their responses before they share. And this does not have to be a formal thing. You don't need a special notebook or anything. They can do this in their English notebook, in a computer doc, or even just scratch paper, like on the margins of a handout or a short story they're reading. Just turn your papers over and write on the back. Often our impulsive or outgoing students, they direct our discussion because our reflective or our shyer students need time to process, or they just need time to get brave and jump in. And not only do our classes really miss out when we lose those voices, but sometimes our impulsive students could benefit from, again, thinking a little bit longer. Plus, having students write down their responses is writing practice, so it's really just wins across the board.
Love it. It's super simple. Such a great just reminder to be utilizing this in class.
And you
Awesome.
don't need to check their writing. You don't need to put it in a grade book. Just have them write it. Just the act of writing it down, that's enough. It's
Yep.
not more work for
Beautiful.
you.
No extra pressure.
No extra pressure.
So how do you approach differentiating elements of a lesson to accommodate varying student needs and interests? So do you recommend using, different texts based on students' interests while still teaching the same skill? Like, what is your approach or thoughts on this, Pat?
You could use different texts. I think the best example I could see of that is maybe if kids are like doing an independent reading, maybe if you were showing a skill and having them like look in their own book, maybe for example, maybe you're talking about leads, and so you have everyone find the first sentence in their own book that they're reading and try to identify that lead. That might be an example. You certainly could bring in different texts. You can also just bring in different topics if you want to make it simpler. You can use models or examples based on topics that you know will interest students, but you can also allow them to give you ideas for topics. So, for example, maybe you're showing students how to fill out a compare and contrast graphic organizer. You could ask students what they would like to compare and contrast as you practice filling one out. And then maybe in pairs or individually, students could do another practice with a chosen topic, and you could do like a class share on that. This one I like to do when you're having students help you craft sentences, like doing mentor sentences and stuff like that. You could show figurative language or grammar techniques with topics that interest them. Like you could say, create a metaphor for your favorite sports team, or craft a simile that describes the sound of your favorite musical instrument, and kind of draw in their topics as they're creating their own examples.
That's super simple. It doesn't have to be this crazy thing with student interests all the time. I love those examples.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Pat. Jess, is there anything else that you want to add to the discussion before we say goodbye?
Well, I'm excited because I know we're coming back to talk more about differentiation later this month. And I feel like, Pat, you touched on some of the things that we're going to go deeper with in that episode. So I feel like it'll be a good follow-up one. So thank you, Pat. I love
Awesome.
these ideas.
Yes,
Yeah.
thank you so much for joining us, Pat. I mean, to talk about whole group differentiation with such simple strategies that teachers can take just one of them, just do one of these for the next month. And that's what I love about this too. Like, there are so many great examples. Like we said at the beginning, just pick one or two. But if you pick one and you as a teacher just practice that one particular thing for a month, it's just going to become second nature. It's just going to become a part of how you operate in the classroom. So pick one, do one, crush it, and then you can add another one in once that just becomes a subconscious way of how you operate as a classroom teacher.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Pat, for joining us. We appreciate you. You're such a wealth of knowledge, amazing curriculum writer. We love having you on the team. And like I said, I'm sure this will not be the last time
I
that
hope
you're on
not.
the
Thank
podcast.
Well,
you.
thanks so much, you guys, for joining us today. Next week, we are going to be talking about teaching beyond tests. So, we're heading into testing season for a lot of us who have state tests on the horizon. We're going to share some very specific strategies with you guys to ensure that you're not just teaching to the test in class, you're using what you're doing in the classroom and incorporating test-taking strategies and concepts to help set students up for success. And then we will be back for more differentiation in the third week of March, to really expand on what we talked about today. So thanks you guys so much for joining us, and we will see you next week on the podcast. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.